And welcome back. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up on the show tomorrow, it's midday with the mayor. Baltimore Mayor Brandon Scott will join me to talk about the pressing issues facing our city. And Matthew Elliston, the Baltimore Field Office Director for ICE, will discuss what his agency is doing to implement President Trump's deportation policy. So that's coming up tomorrow here on Midday. And my next guests today are shining a spotlight on the sometimes troubling history of a local church. Kai Vassar is a Baltimore-based artist and curator. They're also an adjunct professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art. Kai, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And Myra Brocious is a member of the Govens Presbyterian Church up in Northeast Baltimore. She researched the church's history and collaborated with Kai to produce an art installation called Sanctuary City, Part 1 and 2. Myra, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
So, Kai, what was your mandate here? What was your, when they commissioned this from you, what did they ask you to do?
Absolutely. So I submitted a proposal that was originally kind of what went out. And in that proposal, I noticed that Govens was trying to confront the history of institutional racism from the church, right? Based on the research that had already been done by Myra. And they were kind enough to give me quite a lot of the research that Myra had done up until that point for me to create a mural off of. So I used that research from Myra as well as my own research as a professor myself and archivist. And I researched several underrecognized, especially leaders here in Baltimore, such as Pauli Murray or Lucille Gorham, as well as those that have unfortunately succumbed to racial injustices here in the city, such as Freddie Gray, as well as Corinne Gaines in Baltimore County.
And what form does this installation take? What was your medium?
Absolutely. So as I'm sure you all heard, I'm quite busy, I'm not going to lie. So I didn't decide to traditionally paint the mural. Instead, I decided to create a digital illustration, which did allow me to incorporate a map of the previous Govan kind of plantation. But it also allowed me to get fuller images of all of the people or the figures in the mural. So it is a digital illustration printed on two acrylic panels that are about 8.5 feet tall and 2.5 feet wide.
Yeah, they're big. Mm-hmm. Right. And Myra, when you looked into the history of the church, Kai mentioned the Govens plantation. Tell us what you found.
We were very interested in the history, who contributed to our church. And we know, of course, being Govens Presbyterian Church, and we have some of the Govens buried in our cemetery. That was one of the leads I took. And I had, through secondary sources...
And so Govens were the family?
Yes.
That
so,
owned this property?
So Govens is named after the Govan family, spelled G-O-V-A-N-E. William Govan was, I learned through my research, the owner of a plantation. Secondary sources that have all over the place talked about him being a landowner and a sea merchant, but nowhere in secondary sources had I seen that he owned a plantation. So that I think that's pretty new information, which was exciting for me, which I was able to find through the work of a man named Mike Pierce, who has mapped all the original land grants of Maryland, of Baltimore County and Howard County. And so I was lucky to find this gentleman and his mapping, which was allowed me to then overlay that on the city map and understand that we were part of the old plantation. And we also know that he owned 30 enslaved people, which by any standard, I mean, one enslaved person is one too many, but by the standards of the day, even, that was a lot of enslaved people.
Sure. And Kai, how did the fact that this is an installation for a church, a house of worship, mm-hmm. It's not a museum, it's not a gallery, it's not an outdoor space, it's a place of worship, and a place of worship that sits on this ground, mm-hmm. where enslaved people were enslaved. How does that inform and influence your approach to what you wanted to create.
Absolutely. So I looked at artists from previous days, and I also looked at the art already pre-existing in the church itself. And something I wanted my arches to respond to was the Christ the Consular piece that's kind of in the center of the sanctuary. And Christ the Consular, especially in the 17 and 1800s, there were several renditions created by artists during that day. And one that I was the most enamored by was by a Dutch artist named Ari Scheffer. He created a rendition of Christ the Consular, I believe it was in the mid-1800s, that focused on several of the social issues that were happening during that day, whether at the time Poland's conflict with Russia, mothers grieving their infants because infant mortality was super high, even talking about enslaved individuals in his piece. So I found it befitting, and especially in a place of worship, to bring these social issues up, because honestly, that's where communities often go to talk through and hopefully, you know, work through some of these problems together.
Yeah, and Myra, this congregation, it seems to me, is really making a concerted effort to talk through and live with and confront. You have a minister of racial justice who happens to be a dear friend, Leah Gilmore, an incredibly talented person who's worked on social justice issues and is also a wonderful musician with whom I've worked many times. She holds a position that's all about the efforts for social justice, and at a time when DEI itself and inclusivity and equity are under attack, how's the congregation responding to the current moment?
Yes, we're very blessed to have Leah. She was actually first our music director, and I'm in her band at church, The murder of Freddie Gray, and then later
George Floyd, Breonna Taylor. Sure.
Yes, George Floyd was really sort of the impetus for asking her and knowing of her gifts to see if she would be able to lead us through this effort. So she put a proposal together, and we've put our money towards staffing her to lead this effort. She has plummeted us forward. And as we researched our founders, one of them is Turnbull, and he and his wife, Anne Graeme Turnbull, were very instrumental in founding the church. And the window is a memorial to Anne Graeme Turnbull. And she is an enslaver. So when we discovered that fact, even though it was fairly early in my research, it seemed like something we wanted to act on. So we actually came to the congregation and talked about the symbols in our church, which are very Eurocentric biblical figures all over the church. And the fact that we had a memorial to an enslaver with these Eurocentric image of Jesus. So what are we going to do about this? And it was very well received by the congregation to start a dialogue about that. And like many things, you know, there's a lot of statues that we've taken out in our culture in response to these kinds of concerns. So what do we do next? What do we do with this? And the reaction seems to be first to, well, we have to remove it. And yet, you know, it's a very important image in our church, and people are really attached to it.
Yeah, but what's great, I think, is that you're looking at this not only in terms of subtraction, but in the case of your art, Kai, addition. And, you know, to add this artistic component to this consideration. So it shows that you're expanding the notion of what a worship community, what a church community is. It's not just scriptural consideration and community worship. It's a communal approach to how we think about these things. So I am looking forward. I'm sorry to say I haven't been over to see it yet, but I've seen images, you know, on the web, but I'm looking forward to go over and see it, and anybody can see it in the sanctuary at Govan's Presbyterian. So Kai Vassar, Myra Brocious, thank you both for being able to come over and tell us about it. I appreciate it.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you for having us.
And up next, the comedian Alison Goldberg has reimagined the tried and true format of all things, the dating show. We're going to talk about Love Isn't Blind on the other side of a quick break. But before we go to that break, each week here on Midday, it's our practice to read the names of people who've lost their lives to violence in Baltimore City and to list their names on the Midday webpage. We do this to stand in witness to their untimely deaths and to remember their families and friends in their hour of grief. So far this year, 23 people have been identified as victims of homicide in our city. Police have identified 5 people who were killed last week. They are Saquon Newton, age 28, Cameron Kelly, age 16, Deontavis Whitfield, age 23, Selvin Olivares Portillo, age 20, and Eric Carter. He was 30 years old. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Midday on 88.1 WYPR, Baltimore's NPR news station.